Good evening, my name is Adrian and I'm an addict. And the only thing that comes to mind right now is that the lie is that we do recover. And I'm so grateful to be out here, this little gal from Brooklyn, New York, to come to Northern California to let you know that it does work. The program of Narcotics Anonymous is the program to be in if you say you're an addict and you're looking for a recovery. I'd like to thank the committee and all the other members that had a part in me coming out here to share my experience, strength, and hope. But I'd like to thank my higher power because I know it was through him and it was made possible for me to come into this fellowship, for me to come out here to Northern California to carry the message. And the message that I'm carrying is the message of hope, the message of love, and the message of that once you hear this message, you don't have to turn around no more. And consequently, I'm remembering back because they talk about if you don't remember from whence you came, you may return. And I remember early on coming into this program, and I remember before even hearing any type of message of Narcotics Anonymous, how I thought that I could never live that quote-unquote normal life that I always had before I started using narcotics. I remember early on, you know, thinking that getting high was about being normal and having fun and everybody that I grew up with or the era that I grew up in, or that's what it was about. You know, I always like to reflect back. I grew up in the early 60s and all the songs, all the music, it was all a reflection of getting high. I'm talking about Sly and the Family Stone. He wanted to take us higher and I went with it. I'm talking about Psychedelic Shack. I'm talking about Jill Scott Heron living in a bottle. I'm talking about all the songs and everything that was happening during that time was a reflection of people that was using. So consequently, when I was able to come on outside, see, I grew up in Brooklyn in a neighborhood. It's a New York City housing project. And consequently, you know, my mother, she did the best she could. She raised 5 children alone and so forth. And, you know, she was busy trying to make sure that she could feed and clothe us. And she had no idea of any information about a disease. And she knew nothing about what would happen and once I left outside those doors, because all my life I was looking for something to make me whole. You know, I always remember feeling different and feeling like it was a void. So consequently, when I was let outside those doors and, you know, they was out there having fun and I already shared the error it was, you know, it was just waiting for me, my first drug, alcohol. And I can remember early on drinking the alcohol, and I tell you, I was looking for something, and it made me feel good. It filled up the void. It felt warm. It was soothing. You know, my first high was at 16, and you know, my girlfriends were treating me for my birthday. So consequently, we got Coke 45, and, you know, we drank it and smoked cigarettes, and during that time, we used to take the cigarette smoke and put the ashes in the beer because somebody said it gets you higher. So consequently, I realize now I was always looking to get higher without understanding what that meant. So, you know, I started drinking, and I can remember when I drank, it wasn't enough to just be mellow. I was looking to stay mellow. So I kept drinking, and I knew nothing about it. If you keep drinking, what happens? You get drunk. So consequently, I had my first drunk at the age of 16. And I mean, it was nasty and sloppy, and they had to carry me upstairs. And when they opened up the door, I fell to the floor. And all I can remember the next morning is my mother was saying, "Oh my goodness, what is this the beginning of?" And of course she didn't know what it was the beginning of, and neither did I. I just knew I felt bad afterwards, but of course the next day I was looking for it some more. So consequently, that's how my life went on. When our literature, when they talk about getting and finding ways and means to get more, That's my story. That's all I wanted. I didn't want to live this clean way. I wanted to live in this illusion that the narcotics gave me early on. I told you I was looking for something to fill the void. And consequently, that started to fill the void. So, of course, I started smoking reefer. You know, I always like to reflect back. When I was growing up, I used to read these Donald Goins books, Pimp Baby and all that stuff. And in the books, they had, you know, stories of people that were drug addicts and how their life started going on when they used drugs. They picked up alcohol. They picked up reefer. Then they picked up heroin. And that seemed like it was my story because that's what it was about. I started picking up all those drugs in that type of order. And I remember smoking reefer. I never liked smoking reefer. It made me paranoid. It made me act silly. But I liked the high. So consequently, I was smoking reefer and getting silly and getting the munchies and acting stupid. And I did all of this through every aspect of my growing up. My adolescent years were spent getting high. Later on, I learned the term when I came into the program that it was using because the high had left a long time ago. So, you know, I started smoking this reefer and all this time I'm going to school and I'm going roller skating and I'm playing double dutch and I'm meeting guys and you know, everything was around the drug. So then I finally met a drug and through all of this, I was always looking for that right chemical balance to make me really feel the way I was looking to feel. Because like I said, I was getting high, but if something was missing. And I remember in high school, some girls started playing hooky and they started going up to this area in Manhattan and they started coming back. And when they started coming back, they started looking real cool and they wasn't talking and they were smoking cigarettes and they was closing their eyes and they was doing a little scratching and it looked nice. It was something about it that, you know, I had seen other people look like this and those people were real cool at the time. So consequently, I started asking them, you know, what's that about? And of course, you know, growing up using drugs, I realized people always give you that first one free. That's like the introduction. So consequently, they introduced it to me and they were sniffing it up their nose. And of course, my body rejected it immediately. See, the body already knew that it was poison coming into my system, but my mind told me that it was something that was going to get me right. So consequently, I started sniffing it even after the first time of throwing up and feeling all woozy and saying, oh, I'm not going to do that again. Oh, no, I'll drink alcohol and smoke reefer, but no, the heroin, no, that's not for me. But I realized that the progression of this disease moves on. Everything that I said that I wouldn't do, I wind up doing it. And so consequently, I started sniffing heroin through all of this I have to share. I'm going to school. I'm dating guys. I'm doing things, but I'm doing them under the influence. So consequently, I realized since I've gotten clean that there was nothing I experienced because I stayed high for many years. So what happened was I started sniffing it, and then, of course, you know, they introduced needles and said, yeah, if you start to shoot it, you feel it faster. So that's what I did. I went through the skin popping era, and skin popping, oh, my God, if you've ever experienced it, you know what happens. You get all lumpy and dumpy. So consequently, I started looking for spots on my body that had a lot of fat. So, of course, you know, I had it behind. And, you know, I started sticking needles in the booty, getting lumps on the booty, and then couldn't sit down. But I was getting high. I was getting nice. It was feeling warm. It was something about that narcotic. When it got introduced into my system, they talk about the euphoria. They talk about that feeling of being warm. I was looking for that feeling. And when I did this drug, I said, oh, my God, this is what it's all about. This is it. I've arrived. Something about that narcotic, it took away fear. Something about that narcotic, it took away pain. Something about that narcotic, it made me feel. You know, I always didn't like how I look, right? okay? I always didn't like my thighs. I was flat-chested. I had a big ass. I had a big forehead. All these things I saw that wasn't cool about myself. But when I did that heroin, oh, I looked like a model. I sound like a model. I was 10 feet tall. I was talking shit. I wasn't scared of nobody. Every time they got inside of me, I was like, where are they? Come on with it. And there was something about it, that particular narcotic, it made me think I was very intelligent. So, of course, I used to like to do it when I went to school. And, you know, all this time, I'm going to school, I'm living at home, I'm dating guys, all this stuff is happening. And see, I'm doing it recreationally. You know, it wasn't like a major part of my life at this time. It was something, you know, it was a little something we did on the weekend. And during that time, guess what? It was $2. So you know I could get up $2. So consequently, it wasn't like I had to go steal or take anything from anybody. My mother was giving me $1 car fare or, you know, lunch money, and we would get together and get a, we called them deuce bags at the time, and it'd be two or three of us on them, and, you know, it was a cheap high, but it was a long high. So what happened was all this time, I didn't know nothing about progression. I didn't know nothing about a disease. I tell you, I thought I was having fun. So this went on for many years, and, you know, I went through a whole era in the 70s where I put down the heroin and I picked up methadone because that was something that had come into the neighborhood at the time. And at the time methadone came into my area, it came in the form, it wasn't liquid methadone, it came in the biscuit form. And I always had what they call a Kool-Aid system, meaning that I didn't take a lot of narcotics to get me high. And the people I used to use with, oh, they hated it because, you know, I'd have a little bit and I'd be all fired up and I'd go into my Dr. Jekyll, Mr. Hyde. Because like I said, I wasn't a bad person, but when I got that narcotic in me, I was definitely a different person. All these other characteristics started coming out. I was bolder, I was badder, and I was risking to do anything and everything. So when I got introduced to the methadone after putting down the heroin, I started taking a lot of pills. I got introduced to Tuberols and Secanols, and I started going out to these discotheques. And during the time I was going to this discotheque, they were taking a lot of psychedelics. And during that time, we come into this particular discotheque, and when you hung up your coat, they gave you a quarter tab of acid. So you know I was there every weekend. And then consequently, after the quarter tab of acid, like around 2 o'clock in the morning, I'd take my second off. Because I was always looking for the right chemical imbalance. I told you, I liked the narcotic that was more like a sedative. So when I was on these real up highs, I always looked for something to mellow with it to bring me down. So this went on for many years. And meanwhile, the progression is building up. Meanwhile, I've learned since I've been into this program that it's a physical, mental, and spiritual ailment. So consequently, all these areas were being affected in my life, and I didn't know. I was blinded by the light. So consequently, I kept going on this way. And like I said, I was still functioning. I wasn't a functional addict. I heard a friend of mine share that today. I don't believe in that term. How could you be a functional addict? That's like a double negative or some shit. You know, it don't go right. You can't function when you are addict using. That ain't functioning. I was doing a couple of things, but that wasn't functioning. So consequently, I'm doing all this stuff. I graduate high school. I'm using on the weekend. I'm using every other day. I go to college. I'm using all through college. I didn't hear much while I was in there. I got introduced to speed while I was in college. I went on a whole trip with doing speed and so forth. Meanwhile, progression is building up. I'm physically breaking down and I don't even know it. I'm mentally losing brain cells and I don't even know it. I'm being spiritually bankrupt and I don't even know it. But I'm continuing on this path. I can't stop myself. I'm caught up. I'm caught up. And meanwhile, I'm caught up. A lot of stuff is happening around me and I can't even see it. I'm blinded. So I miss many years of growing up. I miss many years of feeling what humans feel. And consequently, I'm meeting people. I met the man that's in my life today. And the way I met him through a high. I met him at a dormitory party, and I pulled out a joint. And I prided myself on being a concierge of marijuana. And you know, you ever met those people? They could tell you if it's Panama Red or the Gunji. And I was a bullshitter. Oh my God, I didn't know what the fuck it was. I just smoked it. But when I met him, I wanted to impress him. And guess what? He fell for it. I pulled it out and I said, oh, this is the red? And he said, oh, wow, I like you. And that was the beginning of a wonderful, mad relationship. Because the relationship was based on drugs. See, you can't relate to anything when you're using narcotics. Because the relationship is with the narcotic. So even though I was meeting people and I was going places and I was doing things, it wasn't real. It wasn't real because I was caught up in the grips. I was involved in something that was bigger than myself. That's why this program, oh, not to get off the track, but this program's so serious because the principals start talking about getting a power greater than yourself to restore you to sanity. See, consequently, I was caught up in a power that had me crazy, and it was greater than myself because I knew no way of getting outside of it. So I went on like this, and like I said, I met this man, and we hooked up, and our relationship was based on using. And I mean, it was based on many years of using. And I can't give you the chronological number, but I know it was something like maybe 15 years I went through using with this man. And I mean, it got progressively worse. I mean, it went from, you know, maybe just a shooting a little something on the weekend recreationally, or having a little holiday high, or, you know, just every now and then maybe smoking a joint and shooting something, and then maybe next week not shooting nothing. And then consequently, it got worse because, of course, we wanted to live together because we both liked the same stuff. And in living together, you ever know what it's like to be caught up in a relationship with another using addict? And, you know, he used to always want me to share and share like. And it's something about this disease and ain't about sharing. And it's something about this disease. It's something about this disease. They talk about the spiritual part of this disease is the total self-centeredness. So how you going to be with somebody sharing something? Sharing something? Shit, you lucky I give you something. Well, consequently, this went on for many years. And I mean, it got to the point where, you know, we used to try to find, we prided ourselves on always keeping a roof on our head. That was a big thing. See, I was one of those addicts when I was using that the denial was that I wasn't as bad as the next person. Meanwhile, I was doing stuff. I got a piece of a job together, and the job was pretty prestigious for a person that was using narcotics. And I was taking other people to court for neglecting and abusing their children. And meanwhile, I got a baby home waiting to use the bathroom while I'm in there shooting up. And I got this job where I'm going to people's houses and investigating whether they're taking care of their children. So meanwhile, all the time this is happening, there's a lot of guilt going on because I know what I'm doing, and then I know what I'm doing on my job, and I'm feeling real bad about myself. So consequently, I'm moving on, and I'm using, and I'm accumulating things, and the addicts I'm hanging out with, they're looking at me saying, you ain't doing so bad. You got a TV and a VCR. You ain't doing so bad. You got an automobile. And see, to understand an automobile in the East Coast, particularly in New York, because we have such a large rapid transit system, it's really a luxury. So when you have a car in New York and you use it, you are a star. Because you gather up addicts in your car and you take them to spots that they don't want to go to on the train. And then you bring them back and then you get high in your car. Your car becomes your life when you're out there using. And that's what happened with me and this guy. We had an automobile and, you know, we would get high in this car and we'd gather people up and take them places. And, of course, they would feed into the denial by saying, you're not that bad. And then at one point during the height of our addiction, we had 2 automobiles. Ooh, man. And guess what, y'all? I don't even drive. And we had 2 automobiles. So you know what happened to the second one? It was one Sunday morning, and we feeling kind of ill, and we see that car sitting out there, and it's like, well, baby, we don't need that anyway. And, you know, I said, why don't we get rid of it? And I remembered one night staying up late, because that was another thing I did when I was using. I did not sleep because I wasn't missing that high. I get high, you wouldn't put me to sleep. Are you crazy? I nodded all night with the TV on. And so consequently, one night through one of my nods and the cigarette burning the sheet, I saw a commercial that said car cash. So I said, car cash? So one Sunday morning when we was kind of ill and wasn't no money around and couldn't lie no more to family members about one of the crises that addicts always have, I said, baby, let's go to car cash and get some money for that car. So we drove up there. And we bought the automobile, and of course, you know, in my mind, I'm grandiose. This is a 74 Super Beetle in fucked up condition. Got a screwdriver, some shit holding up the back seat, keeping up a lot of noise. The car's in bad shape, but we're going to sell it. And I'm thinking to myself, we're going to get about $200. Ooh, we're going to have a good time this Sunday. We're going to get some coke and dope and come back home and relax and, you know, shoot the breeze. And we get up there and the people see this car and they look at us and they look at each other and they say, are you serious? And, you know, of course, we dead serious and I'm running the show because I was the spokesperson. And what happened was they said, well, we'll give you $50. And, you know, they said, do you want to negotiate about it? I said, negotiate? Give us that $50 so we could get on out of here. So consequently, gave us $50 for an automobile and spent half that money getting the cab to get back to the cop spot. But you know, we couldn't wait after we got that money in our hand. It was like my bowels were breaking and it was like, oh, we got to get off E. And, oh, my God, it was just total insanity when I think of my lifestyle. And then that's when I get grateful that I'm not living like that no more. There wasn't nothing glamorous about that. There wasn't nothing glamorous about my lifestyle. Even the days when I thought things were all right. Even on the days when we get over, I remember times of taking people's checks and forging names, and I had all kinds of schemes, and I'm telling you, I had a J-O-B, and I had to live like this. I had a job, and I still had to do illegal things so I could use the way I like to use. So you know I'm feeling bad about myself about right now. I'm feeling bad about who I am. I don't want to feel nothing because I'm caught up. I'm caught up in the grips of an illness that's chronic. I'm caught up in the grips of something that is so baffling, that is so cunning, that there's no answer to it. But the answer was the message of Narcotics Anonymous when I finally heard it. That was the answer. But meanwhile, I don't know any of this. I don't know. I don't know about people living one day at a time. I don't know anything about if you don't pick it up, you can't get high. That doesn't make sense to me. The people I'm using with, they telling me how to detox every now and then when I ask them in them spots. The people I'm using with are people that have swollen hands and big feet and spots on their necks and they're smelling all funny because the body is deteriorating. And these people are telling me every now and then when I get sick and tired, because somewhere in my heart I knew this wasn't right. I said, God, no, this is not my story. Let's stop the stage. No, we got to write a new script. I'm caught up. Every now and then I'd have a glimpse of sanity where something would say, oh, can somebody help me? But see, I didn't know where to go for help. The people I was asking for help were the same people that were using. I'd be in these spots, they call them galleries in New York. Oh, and if you've never been there, you don't want to go. I'm telling you, it's a horrible sight. I mean, to see human deterioration of people doing things with hypodermic needles to their bodies to get high, to get off of E. And I'm talking about I'd be up in them spots. Sometimes I'd come up there with a white blouse and a skirt on, and I'd be like, hello, how y'all doing? And then when I'd come in, I'd be all like, oh, my God. And then once I start to spy, we call them, I know out here we have different terms for paraphernalia. And I heard y'all call yours an outfit. We called ours jimmies and works and so forth. And what happened, I would go into these spots to get some work, because when I go use, I couldn't wait to get back home. I'm talking about progression. I'd go in these spots on my lunch hour, and I'd be all flitty, and then once I get high, I would be in there passing out tissue and passing out water and speaking to people, and they'd be telling me to shut up, because it was something about people that shoot cocaine and dope, they want silence. It was something about that cocaine that you want to hear the bells, you don't want to hear nobody's mouth. And once I got in there and I got high, you couldn't shut me up, because it was something about that drug that just had me going. I'd clean up, I'd straighten up, I'd take care of all my affairs. But what happened? But what happened was, like I said, I was getting a glimpse every now and then. I'd ask these people, I'd say, well, how do you kick this? Because, you know, I want to get off this heroin. I didn't want to be clean. I just wanted to stop with the hypodermic needle. So I would ask these people, and of course, you know, addicts that are using, you know, they're very smart. They know a lot. They know a lot, but they can't, you know anything about their own lives. But they could tell you, they could tell me, well, to drink alcohol and smoke reefer, lock myself in a room and have a lot of sex, and in 3 days I'd be cured. And you know what? I used to believe them and I'd follow their suggestions. But guess what? It never worked. And I followed many suggestions after that. It was somewhere in my using that I started on this journey because I wanted to stop using. And so consequently, I'd start asking people, and I would start going places, and I started trying to go to church with my mother. And when I'd go to church with her, one of my motives for going to church with her was that my mother used to keep a lot of change in a room in one of our, in her house. And when I'd come back from church, she'd be relaxed with me, and she'd let me go in this room when I'd gather up some change to get high. So that was my motive for going to church with her, but I did think there was something going to work in that church. I was looking for something, y'all. I was on the way, and I didn't even know it. And then I remember early on when I was using, me and my girlfriend, we went to a hoodoo lady because I was looking for something, y'all. I tell you, I was on my way. And we went to this woman, and she burned candles and paper bags and said a whole bunch of shit and woo-woo-woo and wah-wah-wah. And all I remember was when me and my girlfriend left there, I looked at her, I said, when are we going to get one? Because that didn't work. But I was on my way, y'all. And I realized today through this process of recovery that when you want to change a behavior, it only needs to start with your heart and your willingness. And then what happens is it's something about getting a high power in your life that when you want to change a behavior, that you start to want to do it. And then people start coming in your life and situations start happening. And the next thing you know, you wake up and the behaviors change. So see, this was happening to me even though I was using. And so I kept looking for things. And I can tell y'all, one of the things I love about this program is that the therapeutic value of the way we write our steps. Because when I was out there using, like I said, I was one of these small addicts. I went to college. It took me 7 years to get a 4-year degree, but I was there. But consequently, I would read a lot. And I used to go to the library and pick up books. And one particular book I picked up one time was by this guy, Dr. Green, and he was talking about how to use narcotics in the right way, how to stop. And he was talking about when you stop using drugs, you got to go buy all these vitamins and gradually stop the cocaine intake. I remember underlining that. Gradually stop the cocaine intake. So that didn't mean to completely stop. It was like, well, if you're shooting a couple of bags, or break it down to maybe a half a bag or whatever. And so, like I said, I was constantly on my way. So one particular night, and this was like 3 months before I heard the message of Narcotics Anonymous, I was getting high, and I had a very difficult time finding veins near the end of my using. And so what happened was I used to use hypodermic needles and pulses. And if anybody knows anything about the insanity of using a hype in a pulse and how what you're doing to your body and that if the wrong color blood comes up, you can almost damn near kill yourself. But I was so daring and I was so caught up in getting these narcotics in my system, that didn't even matter. So I couldn't find veins. I started finding pulses in my groin. And it was one night in particular, I had been sticking myself. I had been sticking myself, and I was feeling really low, y'all. I was feeling really bad. So I was sitting in my apartment, and I said, I want to stop this. And I got out a piece of paper, and I started writing some things I wanted to change in my life. And in writing these things on a piece of paper, I named it my life goals. I had all these other things that were priority, a bigger house, some more money, a better relationship with my husband, a better relationship with my children. Because I forgot to mention, doing all of this, I'd get pregnant. And I have two children, and I use with both of my children. This disease don't discriminate. It knew nothing about being what? It almost seemed like when I was pregnant, it was like the baby wanted more. I had a big habit when I was using. So consequently, when I started writing my life goals, for some reason or another, I put at the top of the page, live drug free. Now, I knew nothing about what I was writing. I knew nothing about living drug free. I didn't know people that was clean. That's not what I didn't think I meant that. I thought I meant just put down that hypodermic needle. But I put it at the top of my piece of paper. And it was something about when I wrote that paper, and I have that paper to this day. Because it's a reminder. It's a reminder I need it. I need to keep that. And I wrote this down, and it was somewhere around 3 months after I wrote this that my life started to change. Like I said, I used with my husband, and he was constantly seeking help in his own way. But when he would go talk about he had a problem, he would never talk about his problem. He'd talk about, it's really my wife. So consequently, what happened was the people he went to speak with at this one particular time, but he had gone on numerous occasions. And another thing, when he would go, he'd always talk about he really drank a lot of alcohol. And he'd have big black tracks on his hands talking about, yeah, you know, I can't put down the beer. And then he would talk about, yeah, and you know, my wife, she really makes it bad. But this one particular time, they wanted to see me. And I'll never forget the day I walked into this man's office. And I never forget that I was high when I went into his office and I had drugs on me. But it was for the first time in my life that I was able to be confronted with the fact that I had a problem. It was the first time in my life that I was able to expose that something wasn't correct. It was the first time in my life I was open for a suggestion. And in being open for that suggestion, he talked about going away for a couple of days. He talked about after going away, after you'd have to make some meetings. And I'm sitting there and I'm shaking my head and I'm feeling real bad because I want help around now. It's like, I want help. This is not going to get it. I'm like 100 pounds. I'm like complexion totally different because narcotics change your whole complexion. It changed the texture of your hair, the texture of your nails, the texture of your skin. It changes everything about you. And consequently, I sat in this man's office, and I was willing to share my story right then and there because I was ready to go. And in being ready to go, I realized at that point I became honest. They talk about the principles of honesty, open-mindedness, and willingness. I was there. I was there. I was there. I was there. And from that point on, I went into this detox, and it was the first time in my life I had ever gone away like that. It was the first time in my life I was confronted with the fact that maybe, just maybe you got a problem, girl. Just maybe you need to get off the streets and get a rest. Just maybe these people could tell you something. Just maybe you could start changing your life again. Just maybe you could get normal. Just maybe I had an inkling of hope. I saw the light. I saw a little light out there. I saw something. And I was willing. And I heard people come up and bring a message. And I heard people come up and talk about, you don't have to live like that no more. And I heard people say, I'm going to give you my phone number. I heard people say, come on to the meeting when you leave this place. That we're going to love you till you learn to love yourself. I didn't love me. I didn't love me. I was self-destructive, caught up in the grips of an illness. This disease is chronic. It doesn't know anything about morals and values. I lost everything. Consequently, when I heard this message, I saw a glimmer of maybe, I could do this. Just maybe I could do this. But in my head, I was still caught up in saying, but I got to get high one more time. Because it was something about I hadn't come to believe all the way. And so what happened was when I left, I used again after hearing the message. And you newcomers here for the first time. Oh, it's so wonderful to be new, but don't stay new. It's so wonderful about hearing this message and knowing you can't use no more successfully. Because I tried it. And it didn't work. It didn't work. It didn't work. I was the type, I bought the basic text. And when I was using it after hearing the message, I'd read relapse and recovery. Do you know what that does for a high? You know my high was messed up, y'all. I couldn't feel it no more. I'm talking about it wasn't the same. And I wanted to go to meetings. But in the meetings, there was something about the spirit in the rooms. There was something about them people being in there. That being high wasn't cool no more. There was something about the shame that I felt while I was high in those meetings and people were clapping for people with clean time. People were talking about living life on life's terms. People were celebrating anniversaries. People were opening up their arms and hugging one another. There was something about that it just didn't fit right while I was sitting there high. So consequently, I realized one day, I said, I need to give myself a break. My last high, I'm shooting cocaine and I'm on my way to a meeting. And one was too many. And like we say, 1,000 was never enough. And it finally sunk in. I said I could do all the drugs, have all the money to get everything, and it will never be enough. It will never be enough. It will never be enough. I am who I am. I'm an addict. But today I'm a recovering addict. So consequently, when I heard this message and I used and it didn't work, and I realized that one, I would never get enough, I started to give myself a break. I came on in and I decided to join y'all. And I tell you, it's been one roller coaster ride after another. And they talk about when you get clean, that it gets better. And you start to wake up, you start to feel. Oh, I remember my first sexual experience clean. Oh, my God. Oh, my God. Oh, my God. I'm talking about, I remember hearing music clean. I heard the instruments. It was nothing like that other illusion. I heard sounds. I tasted food. Do you know how that felt? I wasn't eating. My diet. What diet? I started eating. I started waking up. I physically started getting better. I mentally started clearing up. My spirit came alive. Because I chose another way. I chose another way. And like they said, it's a journey. And I've been on it. And you know, things get real. I tell you, I was with this man we used for many years. When I got clean, I didn't know if I wanted this man. You know what I'm saying? I didn't know who I wanted. I was a little confused. And consequently, I was waking up. Oh man, second step said, we come to believe. I was coming on out of it. I see one of the banners y'all have is out of the fog. And I see living in this particular state in the morning, the fog is real thick. And consequently, as the day moves on, it rolls on out. And that's what was happening in my life. things were waking up, and I was starting to deal with some feelings. I had a husband and two children. I came into the fellowship. My daughter was 11 months old. My son was 6 years old. I didn't know how I was going to make meetings. I had a J-O-B. I'm telling you, I didn't know how I was going to do this thing. Consequently, they talk about when you put one foot forward to help yourself, the God that you get, he puts the other foot there. This higher power in my life started putting family members in my life to babysit for me so I could make 90 meets in 90 days. It was a miracle. It was a miracle. Things started happening. I tell you, this relationship, I didn't know this person. I woke up 6 months clean and I wanted to know who the fuck these people were in my house. I was high. I was in a nod. I didn't know nothing about what was happening now. But I had to deal and I wasn't using. So I had to go to meetings and talk about these new feelings, what's happening. I had to talk about how I've been relating to a narcotic for many years. I got a family now. And what happened was I started talking about it. I started doing steps. I started praying. And I didn't use. And it just started getting better. One day I started accepting the fact that I'm a wife. I started accepting the fact that I was a mother. Not that I liked it. I'm going to tell y'all, there's a difference in acceptance and liking it. There's a big difference. I started accepting what my role was. And I started learning how to do some things clean. I started learning how to be in a relationship. And I'm telling you, it was rocky. Because me and this man didn't know one another. Somewhere in my fifth year, you know, infidelity came into play. And infidelity was always a part of my relationship, but I was using. And I chose to ignore it because I lived in denial. And I had to deal with feelings of this man cheating. And consequently, you know, I was cheating my damn self. And I had to deal with all these new feelings of this stuff that I had never dealt with before. And I wasn't using y'all. I was making meetings. I was talking about it. And it was feeling real bad. It didn't feel comfortable. I wanted something to take the edge off. And I couldn't use. I used you people. I talked about it. I cried about it. I didn't know, what do you do? Where do you go from here? I've been with him. Oh, what's going on? How do we work this thing out? But I didn't use. And they talk about, you're going to go through some stormy weather in here. But it ain't nothing about the sunshine after the storm. Because once you go through the storm, you don't walk alone in Narcotics Anonymous. You got people by your side. And I went through a little storm. And we separated for a while. Because it was necessary. Because I realized there's something about separation sometimes from things. When you get away, you get a clear picture, a better perspective of what you want to do. These principles start to become real in your life. There's something about writing steps, but it's a motherfucker putting them in your life. You can write forever and ever. But I'm talking about taking the words off the page and putting it in your existence and living what them words are saying. That's a little different, y'all. And I started having to practice this when I was going through the storm. And I had to make this decision. And I had to trust in this God. And I had to turn it over to his care. Because I didn't want to be by myself. I didn't want to be by myself raising two children. And so what happened was, through the process of this program, through the process of prayer, through the process of trusting it's going to be all right, we got back together. Yes, we got back together. That's my story. I'm everyone. That was my destiny. That was my fate. We got back together through all of this, but that wasn't over. Life on life terms for a recovering person is not easy. And that's why when I come on out here and see this wonderful northern region of people that are looking for love, that are looking for hope, that are looking for a new way of life, it rejuvenates me. It lets me know that we do recover. Together. Together. Together in unity. No matter what happens, we do recover. And like I said, that was just one aspect of things that were happening to me. I tell you, I abuse myself physically. So consequently, I go through physical changes in this process of recovery. I remember this is threefold disease. And consequently, every area was affected. So in recovery, every area has to be worked on. And what's happening for me now is that I'm working on this physical thing. But I'm not neglecting the mental. I'm not neglecting the spiritual. But where I'm at right now is that it took me 7 years to get a physical. Newcomers, they talk about get a physical. I couldn't face the physical in early recovery. I was too ridden with fear. I was too ridden with shame. Or when I walk into that doctor's office and they talk about taking blood from me and they can't find a vein, I was too ridden with fear. So consequently, 7 years, I did my first physical and I had to go back for results. And I was really scared. And things were all right, but things weren't all right because I did damage out there. And when I say they weren't all right, that means that I can't forget I used narcotics for many, many years. So even though I'm in this process of recovery, I'm in the process of healing also. So consequently, I'm learning to take a physical every now and then. And every time I go in for that physical, I'm ridden with fear, I'm ridden with shame because, you know, I look pretty clean today. I've cleaned myself up. And when I go in there and they roll up a sleeve and they can't get a vein, they start looking at me funny. And when they start looking at me funny, my image just gets this big. You know, my ego tells me, oh, motherfucker. They know. But you know, right? It's all right that they know. Because what they know, I'm not doing no more. What they know is necessary for them to know if I'm to get better. And every time they get that blood, oh, I cry. Because I cry those tears of joy. Because they have to stick me quite a few times. And then I have to go back for results for that. And consequently, because of how I use, I realize I'm in the process of recovery and I've changed my diet. And I believe in a whole different school of thought on how you can heal yourself. And some of that healing process I believe in is through making meetings in Narcotics Anonymous. And through some of that healing process I believe in is through the touch and the love I get from recovering addicts. And some of that process I believe in, I believe that when you believe that I'm going to be all right, it's going to be all right no matter what it is. I believe that. Like I said, I had some physical ailment, and I realized there's something about holding on to resentment that it affects you physically, mentally, and spiritually. And I realized I had a lot of resentment when I started clearing up. I had a lot of resentment that I didn't want to deal with. So consequently, I had physically manifested an ailment that in my spiritual belief talks about that you will develop when you hold on to anger. And I physically had to go to these holistic people and get help so I could start to cleanse myself. Because see, these steps talk about looking at you. These steps talk about getting in touch with God. These steps talking about taking inventory. These steps talk about only God can remove certain behavior. These steps talking about putting humility in your life. These steps talk about making a list and then going to people only when it won't harm them or anyone else and making some type of amends. These steps talk about this continuous process of looking at yourself. These steps talk about seeking through prayer and meditation to improve contact with a God. And then these steps talk about a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps and how you practice. Oh God, I practiced so many negative ways for so many years. And today these steps talk about practicing principles in all my affairs. And they talk about you can't keep it unless you give it away. And I'm giving it away, y'all. I'm giving it away. Because I want to keep it. You know, I came out here and I've only had support and love since I've been out here these 4 days. I've only had support and love of people that talk about in Narcotics Anonymous You have friends you haven't met. They talk about when you say you're an addict, that there's principles before personality, that no matter what's going on with you, if I like you, don't like you, that you're just like me. These principles, this program, it talks about how we're all the same. How no matter what race, creed, color, religion, sexual orientation, that we only want to help you with your problem. This program, I could go on and on and on and on and on about the help I've received since I've been in this program, how this process is ongoing, how, like I tell y'all, that it's continual work on myself, how I tell y'all how I love being a part of something today, how I want to tell you that there's nothing like being in a room of recovering people who clap for clean time. There's nothing like being in a room of people that want to help you with your problem. They don't care where you came from. Don't care if you got money or you ain't got no money. This disease knows nothing about that. I'm in a room of people that want to do something about themselves. I'm connected to something today. I'm in a big connection. That's what it is. Together in unity, I'm in a connection of a wonderful collective body of people that are trying to change the attitude of the universe because we're not using. I'm in a productive organization today. I'm in it. It's Narcotics Anonymous. I'm in it. And I'm so happy. And I'm so grateful that I'm not back where I used to be 8 years ago. That no matter what's going on, no matter what's happening, like I said, it gets shaky in here. You deal with relationships, you deal with physical ailments. In the area I live in, a lot of the addicts, they're dying. And they're dying as a result of another disease that they're living with clean one day at a time. And they're dying clean. And they're dying clean after going through physical evolution of your body deteriorating and hair falling off and not being able to hold food down. And they don't want to use. And they don't want to use through all of that. And they're examples to me that no matter if they could do that, because you know what? I don't know if I could do that. This is a day-to-time process. I don't like pain. I tell you, for years I medicated myself. I don't like pain. So consequently, I don't know. But I know, guess what I know? I know if I continue to remain a member, if I continue to believe in the belief that I could do this thing one day at a time, then no matter what obstacle comes in my life, that y'all can help me pull through this. I'm not alone today. They say NA means never alone. I'm not alone out here. I'm miles from my home. I'm not alone. I'm not alone when I look up there. I can't see you. Y'all are anonymous to me up here. Because it's real, real dark. But I know you out there. I feel your love. I feel your energy. I feel your hope. I feel your spirit. I feel it right in this room. I feel it. 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 I'm accepted today. And I'm not using. And y'all don't care if I got hair. Y'all don't care if I got teeth in my mouth. Y'all don't care if I got clothes. Y'all only care that I don't want to return to that old way of life. Y'all want me because I can never want me. And the want that you want for me is the want you want for you. And that's how we keep this thing going. It's the connection. It's the connection. Oh, man. My gratitude speaks when I can. I share the Narcotics Anonymous. I just have to say that. I have to end this because I don't want to become overwhelmed. You know, I got the image. I really do it. And since I got clean, you know what's happening to me lately? God is breaking the image down. He's causing me feelings that allow me to cry. He's causing me feelings that allow me to open up, to let you know I'm human, I'm vulnerable, that it's okay to feel so overwhelmed with the joy of not living like I used to live. I don't want to return there. Check it out, y'all. I got marks on my body. And they told me early on, you turn your scars into stars. And like I said, I used to take a hike and I used to stick it in my post. And I have two little scars on my neck. And I live with them sometimes, and I live with them in shame. And I live with them, and I'm able to not try to cover them up, because y'all taught me early on when I came in here that I don't have to cover up no more. I covered up for many years. So consequently, I live with the shame of when the regular Joe Blow starts looking in that direction. And I feel kind of bad, but I've learned that I don't have to feel bad and beat myself no more, because I'm not doing it today. I don't have to feel bad that was part of my past, and my present is not about that. I don't have to feel bad that I don't have to go back there no more. I don't have to feel bad that I'm not sticking no spike in my body no more. I don't have to feel bad because y'all have given me the love and support to know that it's okay, Adrian, that's all right. Yeah, you've been there, but you ain't got to move there no more. And see, that's only because I'm able to expose that particular part of me to y'all. See, everything I've done in this process, I've done first in the room. And then I'm able to do it outside the room. So I'm growing up right here with all of y'all. At the age of 30 plus, I'm growing up. I'm growing up. I'm growing up. I'm growing up. And you're growing with me. And I have to share this. I came out here to let you know. I came out here to let y'all know that I love you, because you have loved me and you have brought me back. It is you people out there that have brought me back from the dead. And I'm living today. We're together in unity. And we live in this new way of life, of traveling, of eating food, of having sex, having fun, going through changes, not using, all picking up the phone, putting down the phone, and just doing all kinds of wonderful things through this process of this new way of life. I'm living in the now, y'all. And the now is the moment, and the most moment I'll ever have. And I'm on a high, and it's a natural one. Because I'm in a program, and together in unity, I want to thank the Northern Region for having this school gal from Brooklyn to come and tell you that I love you. 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 Thank you. Thank you.